You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey, everyone. Welcome into another podcast here for the Cleveland Indians. Tim McMaster along with Jordan Bastian, our MLB.com Indians reporter. And you talk about this Indians team heading into the winter meetings. Obviously, there's been all of this success over the last 2 years. No ring, but a trip to the World Series. Yep. And now you're at the point where the window's open. You got to keep it open, right? Is that's the goal here this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, and a year ago, you know, we came to the winter meeting saying, you know, we're not sure how much money they have. We don't think they're going to do much. And by the end, there were all these rumors about Edwin Encarnacion, and it wasn't that long after that that came to fruition. So feels similar right now in that the need is similar. They could do first base. They could do corner outfield. But they still have that need. You know, they're losing offense. Carlos Santana's a free agent. Jay Bruce is a free agent. You know, they picked up the option for Michael Brantley. You know, but they could kind of solve it by getting a corner bat, whether it's infield or outfield, and adjust accordingly internally. And right now, it doesn't look like they have as much financial wiggle room as they did a year ago. You know, that Encarnacion deal is, you know, locked them in for a few seasons. But that's kind of where they stand again as we sit here in these winter meetings.
And a year ago, it was almost like this whole team's coming back. This team that was so close to a World Series, except Mike Napoli.
Yeah.
And they plugged him in with a better player. But now you mention it. There's more leaving at this point. And this is when staying good gets a little tougher. First base, one thing. Bullpen, too. The bullpen has been such a huge part of this whole thing. Brian Shaw's a free agent.
Yeah, he's a free agent. And when you look ahead to next year, Andrew Miller and Cody Allen could be free agents as well. So you're right. Like, the window is now. I mean, 2016, they surprised people by getting the World Series. 2017, they were supposed to go deeper than they did. 18, 19, 20 is really like this window with these guys that they have signed into extensions, locked in. They made a lot of moves in the last couple of years, you know, trying to make this window last. And so right now they are facing some of that. They signed Dan Otero to a cost-effective extension for the next couple of years because of that bullpen, as you mentioned, lost some parts. They lost Joe Smith to free agency. Brian Shaw is a free agent. They have interest in trying to bring back either one of those guys, but you know, the market for relievers right now might not make that realistic. So you're right. Like, the window's now. They got to try and find a way to build on it. But again, I just don't know how much flexibility unless they make some trades. You know, Jason Kipnis's name has been floated out there. If they make a trade to free up some salary, that would maybe free them up to play a little more in free agency.
When you talk about Santana and Kipnis, the possibility of trading a guy like Kipnis, I mean, these aren't just key players to what they've done, but leadership guys, too.
Right.
I mean, Kipnis is such a key to that clubhouse, right?
Yeah, he is. And, you know, when Kipnis has been healthy, he's been an all-star caliber player. You know, when you look at his career track record, the seasons that stand out as being down years, last year included, there's always a health issue involved. I wouldn't call him injury prone, but he's had a couple years where things have come up. And I think they're in a situation now where Jose Ramirez has risen to the level that he has. They loved what he did at second base. So they're sort of discussing internally, do you keep Jose Ramirez at second base because of the value he brought, not only offensively, but defensively? Or are you in a situation where Kipnis goes back to second, Ramirez goes back to third? And if it is Ramirez at second, well, then where does Kipnis fit? You know, you've got Michael Brantley back. He's your left fielder. Bradley Zimmer could be coming back for center. You know, if you want Kipnis in the outfield, then that might mean Brantley has to move to first and split time at DH with Edwin. So there's a lot of these moving parts right now. What it does, it allows them in the offseason to cast a wider net, say, hey, we can target the best player that fits our offense and shift guys accordingly. But right now, it's really hard to pinpoint which direction they're going to go.
You mentioned third base.
Right.
I mean, there's options there, right? What if those moves don't happen, who's just settled in to be the guy there on opening day?
Yeah, so like the natural answer would be, well, you could go Kipnis at second, Ramirez third, Brantley left, because that's what they've done in the past. But defensively, maybe that's not the best option anymore given Brantley's history of injury. Maybe they want to reduce his amount of running in the field, try and keep him on the field more. You have Ramirez who could go to second and potentially be an upgrade defensively over Kipnis. Now you've got Yandy Diaz, who they're very intrigued by. Down the stretch, he was a much better hitter than he was earlier in the year. He's a guy that could play third, and if they move Ramirez to third, then you're all of a sudden talking with Yandy about potentially first base, potentially left field. So it's every move or decision that they make will somehow cause a ripple throughout the rest of the roster.
Is this a thing? You talk about managers and having players like that. And Joe Maddon's kind of been famous as loving those guys you can move all around. Does Terry Francona embrace that too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, versatility is what he loves. He loves having, especially on his bench guys too, who can play tons of position, because he says it makes it feel as a manager like your 25-man roster becomes a 27-man roster just because one guy can go to different spots, or it frees him up when he's making in-game strategy moves. You know, if he wants to get a better hitter in to exploit a platoon advantage, he knows he's got guys who can shift around the field, so maybe he's not losing anything defensively. So he loves that versatility. A guy I haven't even mentioned, Lonnie Chisenhall, he could play right field. Last year he played center field, left field. He could also play first base. He used to be a third baseman. So you can kind of see how each of these guys have those multiple positions built in. And it's going to be really interesting, not only for the rest of the winter to see how they approach it, but then once we get to spring to see how that roster puzzle comes together.
You mentioned Zimmer, obviously the injury last year cutting short his rookie season. He showed so much promise in center field and what he can do defensively. The bat didn't come quite like I think they expected to eventually. Mm-hmm. When you look ahead to 2018, do they expect him to take a, I don't want to say a leap, but a big step forward with the bat?
Yeah, I think that's the hope. I mean, right now he projects as their starting center fielder.
Yep.
What he brought, even when he went through some hitting slumps, what he brought defensively and speed-wise, would still give value to the point where if he's in a slump, you can live with it. And he's down there at the bottom of the lineup, you know. So it's when he's slumping, he's still bringing value to the team. So I would see him in center field. And last year down the stretch, you know, keep going back to Kipnis, but Kipnis played center while Zimmer was out, and that's sort of what has led into some of these other conversations. But right now, I think Zimmer, who was like built for StatCast, you know, I think he's going to be the center fielder next year, and I would think that experience he had last year would hopefully give him that base to take another step forward for sure.
All right, looking ahead to the future, obviously we always have to keep an eye on the farm and on the prospects, and you look at the system right now, and Francisco Mejia, he's the number one prospect right now, and I think he's an interesting guy for this Indians team because, A, he was almost traded. Not last season, but the season before at the deadline. And B, he had that crazy hitting streak that I think made a lot of headlines that same season. Where is he at as far as developing, not as a hitter, because we know he can hit, but is he at the point where they'll soon have confidence that he can catch at the major league level?
Yeah, see, this is another very interesting thing and another place where they're introducing versatility. He went to the Arizona Fall League and played third base.
Yeah.
You know, so that was really interesting because he is their number one catching prospect. But they've got Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez both locked in long-term deals, and they love what both of those guys do defensively. They've had their ups and downs offensively. So where Mejia comes into play right now is his bat might be really close to being major league ready, but because of what they have locked in with their catchers and the rapport that they love that Gomes and Perez have with the pitching staff, which is obviously the backbone of this Indians team, that rotation and the bullpen. You know, so they love having those two catchers. So I think they wanted to try and introduce some versatility, bring Mejia into spring, see what he looks like at third. Maybe he's like a hybrid player. You know, maybe if he impresses and wins a spot on the team, maybe it's moving around in different capacities, or at least introduces another route to the majors where if he starts in the minors, you know, and maybe things don't work out as well like they hoped with Yandy Diaz. Maybe if Mejia, if they think he can handle third, maybe that's an option. If Gomes or Perez don't pan out and they all of a sudden become more realistic trade chips, you know, guys that they want to move. Mejia's bat is almost there. It's just right now they're trying to figure out that path to the major leagues.
All right, this has been MLB.com Extras, our Indians edition. For Jordan Bastian, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with Scott Merkin, our MLB.com White Sox reporter. And the White Sox, the rebuild is not just on now, but it's kind of getting to that point where these prospects have made it to the big leagues. There's a lot of excitement on the south side of Chicago. Right. As we take in this winter meetings, you look back to a year ago, and I don't know if ever a team has stolen the headlines as much by trading away players as the White Sox did a year ago. What do you remember most just about, you know, the Eaton and Sale deals and how crazy things got down in the D.C. area?
You know, Rick always jokes about winning the winter meetings because the year before he had acquired Samardzija and then signed David Robertson. And he said he's still waiting for the plaque for, you know, for the, but I mean, it was pretty amazing. And I think that's why their rebuild is so much different than the Cubs and the Astros and even the Royals in that the guys they had, not only were they great players and actually all great kids on top of it, but great contractual control. So with that, you're able to get a lot back right away. So with Sale, you know, arguably in the team picture of the top three or four best starting pitchers in all of baseball. You get back, you know, the number one prospect in the game at the time in Yoan Moncada. You get Michael Kopech. And then you get a couple other guys in Diaz and Bisabi who could help out too. And the next day, you know, the site is barely cold from that story. They trade Adam Eaton, who's, you know, maybe one of the top two or three best top leadoff men in the game. And you get three pitchers, two of them already been in the majors with the Sox, Lucas Giolito, and Ronaldo Lopez. And Dane Dunning's coming fast. So, you know, that really, I know they had talked about it at team meetings earlier, and I guess it was October, maybe even November, that this is the direction they were going. And they had sort of gone in that way with, you know, Ricky Renteria coming in as manager, Nick Capra, third base coach, Kurt Hassler, bullpen coach, guys who had extensive minor league experience. But it really, that was the first step, and it was a huge step when you get, what, seven prospects back for two guys in that, and just in that winter meetings alone before the Quintana and the trading of the entire bullpen came in season.
Yeah, it's amazing stuff that they've been able to accomplish. So that brings us to this winter meetings, and certainly expected to be a little quieter, although you look at the roster, there's actually still guys that could be dealt, and we've heard rumors about Jose Abreu. We've heard interest from the Red Sox and other teams. I mean, is that something that could move quickly at some point, or do you see that eventually happening?
I think, first of all, the busiest day for the Sox at the winter meetings might be Thursday with the Rule 5 pick.
Yeah.
They may add a couple guys there, and they're 40-man's at 36 right now, so there's a chance there's a couple guys that could come on and help them. Maybe, you know, a guy in the bullpen. First, they need bullpen help after trading so many guys. You know, Abreu, I think it's going to be – if the trade happens, it's because the haul back is ridiculously good.
Which is what Rickon has done.
Right, yeah, exactly. And I think it's more played like the Jose Quintana situation last year, where you don't have to trade him. You don't want to trade him. He's beloved in the clubhouse. Quintana was beloved in the clubhouse. Abreu even took another step last year where he kind of had the Paul Konerko role, where he was the voice of the clubhouse, voice of the team, even though he does his interviews with an interpreter. He still had that kind of personality, that kind of take charge role. So again, you have 2 years of control over him. No one says it has to be done by Thursday when they leave here, sometime Thursday morning. So I think it's a possibility. I think Avi is the same thing. Now the thing with Avi Garcia, you know, people had waited for this kind of 5-tool potential to kick in, and it did last year in a big way. Guy hit the third best average in the major leagues, hit .330. I think teams probably want to see how that picks up. I personally think he's found something that he can carry over. Is he going to hit .330 every year? Probably not. Right. But he will be a contributor. So I think he's a guy who maybe is more likely to go to the Abreu, but I think neither one you need to force the issue. I know neither one you force it because you have 2 years of control over both.
You look at 2018, what needs to be added? We talk about trading away players and still getting young and adding more talent, but you also still have to do your best to win as many games as you can the next season. So when you look at this roster as it currently sits, what are they trying to add this offseason?
Well, before I came here, we were interviewing a bunch of us, interviewing Hawk Harrelson.
Yeah.
Will truly be missed in this game, doing 20 games this year, iconic broadcaster. And he summed it up, you know, bullpen, bullpen, and bullpen. You got to have great relief help there, and I think – with them trading so many last year, you know, Dan Jennings, David Robertson, Tommy Canley, Anthony Swarzak. I'm sure I'm leaving someone out in there who got traded, but you have to rebuild a little bit amidst the rebuild. So they have some young guys that they can work in there, but I think you're going to look at guys who aren't just a year sign who you could flip. You might have a guy like the Wellington Castillo signing who you can lock down for a couple years, maybe with an option for a third year, and a guy who could help you now bridge the gap and then also be a contributor when the team is good. So I think it's sort of that kind of look. I also think, though, that the kind of the top end of the bullpen crew has to kind of filter down a little bit with signings before I think the Sox really get into, you know, who they're signing, which of course means they'll announce a signing as soon as we're done with this taping right here.
And we'll bring you back if
there you go
do.
Perfect.
Carlos Rodon had the injury last year. Is there a timetable for him getting back into this rotation?
They've been very consistent that at the time of the surgery it was 6 to 8 months. I would not expect him at the beginning of the season, but they've also been very consistent in that they can't make any sort of judgment until spring training when they see him, you know, throw off the mound. Right now he's going through the rehab process, doing his exercises, that kind of thing, just to get the shoulder strong again. You know, as are most surgeries, they said it went well, everything was good, but they have said, Rick's been asked about this a couple times, the GM meetings, I'm sure he'll be asked about this here, but they basically have said the same thing, that you don't really know where you're going until he starts throwing in Arizona come February.
You look at this system, most people say the number one organization as far as prospects,
right,
now that the Yankees have graduated some. And they already, obviously, Moncada's been up and all of that. But you look at the top five, you have Eloy Jimenez, Kopech, and Luis Robber, and Rutherford that they got from the Yankees. Dylan Cease, so many guys that people that follow prospects really know, like,
right,
oh, that
right
guy. Who do you think is next to make his way to the big leagues out of that group?
Well, it's interesting you say about the prospects, too. You know, we do the top 100 prospect story every year. And I remember a couple of years where you're kind of like trying to finesse the guy who's 98.
Yeah.
And that's the only guy for the Sox. And now you're like, who do I lead with? They have like seven up there. Although some, like you said, have with them to have graduated. I think Michael Kopech will be the next guy up. I think he'll follow a similar path as Ronaldo Lopez last year. He'll get a little time in Charlotte, and then eventually he'll be, you know, he'll get to the majors. June maybe or something like that. And then I think Eloy Jimenez, although he just has a little time in Double A and that's his highest level, you know, the Sox are not afraid of pushing a guy if they, you know, kind of show they can handle it. Again, they're also not rushing anyone, but I think he could kind of force the issue. I would say Kopech, though, of the group, is the next one probably up there.
All right, great stuff. Great catching up with you. This has been MLB.com Extras, our White Sox edition. Tune in again next week. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here along with Jason Beck, our MLB.com Tigers reporter. And obviously the Tigers are in a position here at the winter meetings in Lake Buena Vista, Florida, that they haven't been in a long time. It's a rebuild situation. But what a cool way to start these winter meetings. On Sunday night, we found out that Jack Morris and Alan Trammell, thanks to the Modern Era Committee, heading to the Hall of Fame this summer. And it's two guys that have waited a long time. It's two guys that played together. I'm just being in Detroit, knowing the history of these guys, how cool is it to see this for the city?
Oh, it's absolutely huge. I think people, if you're not from Detroit, I think it's hard to realize just the significance of this, because as great as that 1984 team was that won the World Series title, there was no player from that team had gotten into the Hall of Fame. And it was something that stuck in the craw of a lot of Tigers fans over the years, and there was a lot of resentment that nobody had even come close. I mean, I guess Jack came close
right
the last couple of years, but that nobody had gotten in. So in a lot of ways, I think this feels like vindication for a lot of people. I think a lot of Tigers fans would still like to see Lou Whitaker get in, but I think to have Trammell in for his contributions after years of debate, well, you know, what makes him any different than Ozzie Smith? What makes him any different than Barry Larkin, Cal Ripken, other shortstops of that era? I think a lot of people in Michigan, a lot of Tigers fans nationwide feel like this is righting what had been a wrong on the writer's ballot. And I think a lot of writers who had voted for him over the years are pretty happy about it as well. Jack Morris winning his pitcher in the 1980s, I think there's a lot of support for him too. I think a lot of people felt like he was eventually going to get in, given the level of support that he had. I think Trammell was the bigger question because he'd never gotten over 50%
right
on the writer's ballot. And because I think the sentiment for Tram is not just about his playing career, but he did spend, you know, to spend that long with one franchise. You might not see that again. You really might not. And it's just, even after his playing career was done, he managed the Tigers for a few years. He came back as a special assistant. He bounces around the minor leagues now at age 59, teaching and instructing, trying to teach the game to younger players, not because he needs the work, but because
right
it's what he loves to do. And I think there's so much appreciation for that with him that in some ways this feels like a just reward for him for a lifetime in baseball.
Jack Morris works for us at MLB.com. So we had very neat access to the whole scenario. And cool moment was after Jack went on his conference call, before Trammell got on his conference call, they were able to talk over the phone. And these are two guys that I guess Jack had the line, I got to make sure he's in my phone still. I haven't talked to him in a while. But then from Jack's standpoint, he got emotional when he found out, because he knew he was in, but he had to wait for the announcement to find out that Trammell was in. And he got emotional when he found out, to the point where it was almost like he was happier to see Trammell get in than he was for himself. It was really cool to see. And I think that kind of love fest, so to speak, is going to continue right into the summer. And it's going to make for a neat weekend in Cooperstown.
I can't wait to see how many people from Michigan make the trip over to Cooperstown, cross over through Ontario, cross the border at each end, and go over to enjoy a weekend, because they haven't had, I mean, they haven't had an inductee since Sparky.
Yeah.
They haven't had a player inducted since, I believe, 1992. And really, for a lot of people, this will be the biggest induction since Al Kaline went in, I believe, 1980. So, I mean, there are a lot of folks, a lot of young fans who have never been alive to see, you know, a Tigers player inducted as a Tiger. Granted, we had Pudge last year wearing a Rangers hat. So to have two players from the same team inducted, I know talking with a lot of their old teammates, a lot of them are going to try to make the trip up from points all over the country. And I would suspect you're going to see a lot of Tigers fans, even though it is a long drive, try to make that trek. You're going to see a lot of Old English D in Cooperstown come end of July.
Alan Trammell, obviously a no-brainer. He's going to be wearing the Old English D on his hat in Cooperstown. It's a little more interesting for Jack, and I don't think he's been asked officially about it yet, and I don't think he wants to be asked about it yet. I'm sure today it'll come up at the press conference. But the Tigers, obviously, he won in 84, and he was great for a long time. Then he goes to the Twins. That's his hometown team. He grew up in Minnesota, and he had the performance in Game 7 of the World Series there. Then he goes to Toronto. He wins two World Series, but he was less of a factor there. We've seen players go in without a logo, which is an option. But how much do you think it matters to Tigers fans for him to decide on wearing the Old English
team? I actually think it does matter. Yeah. I think a lot of people, and I'll be curious to see if the fact that Trammell is going in with him influences that decision at all to want two guys wearing the same cap going at the same time, and to celebrate the fact that two teammates from a team that really went under-recognized in the hall go in at, you know, wearing the same logo at the same time. I suspect that'll be a big deal for a lot of fans.
And yeah.
Probably a lot of their teammates as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. And while his best performance was with the Twins, I think the bulk of his career and when he was at his best overall was definitely in Detroit. And he gets a say, but they've taken the final say, I guess, away from the players. So at the end of the day, Cooperstown has overriding power. But I think they pretty much, in this situation, they would probably let him decide what he would prefer. We'll find out at some point, and I don't know if he'll announce it sooner or later, but it'll be interesting. This summer, more other than Cooperstown, more to look forward to for Tigers fans as the numbers are going to be retired at some point. I assume that's going to be together, right? They'll retire numbers.
Yeah, Chris Illich, who's essentially the owner of the Tigers, he acts as the owner. He announced in a statement last night that they're going to have a ceremony to retire the numbers in August, so they're going to wait for the ceremony in Cooperstown, and then shortly after that, they haven't announced a specific date yet, but they're selling a ticket package for it that they're going to have them go in, and it'll be interesting to see how that all comes together. They're going to have to, I think, make some room on that brick wall beyond the outfield. They're going to have to make some extra room to put those numbers in, and there's going to be debate over, do you make statues for these guys? Because the other Hall of Famers have statues. And I think a lot of people have already felt that, even aside from the policy that, except for Willie Horton, Tigers have to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame to get their numbers retired. A lot of people have felt like Tram has long deserved a statue in his honor, Tram and Lou Whitaker. So I'll be curious to see how and if plans formulate along those lines, but it's going to be a fun debate. And plus, nobody's worn Jack Morris's number since Jack Morris on the Tigers. Okay. That's something where, the Tigers have a longtime clubhouse manager, Jim Schmeichel, who kind of sees to that. Trammell's number 3 has actually been worn a couple of times over the years. Gary Sheffield wore it for a couple of years when he was a Tiger, and then Ian Kinsler took on number 3 when he came over because he wanted to wear it. For now, he is still a Tiger. I texted Kinsler last night. He doesn't know what the plan is. I think the Tigers have reached out to try to start the conversation, but nobody knows if it's going to be a moot point because of the trade market, or if they're going to wait until August and have some sort of a handoff ceremony, or what's going to come together. They're probably going to have to play it by ear.
What a perfect transition into Ian Kinsler, because when you talk about rumors here at winter meetings, it's probably more about him and the Tigers than anyone. There are teams that need second basemen. The Mets are one of the teams that famously at this point needs a second baseman. And Kinsler is one of those guys that when you look at the contract and you look at where he is, he seems to make sense. So do you think that's something that if you were a betting man, is that something that will get done, that they'll move him, or do you think they'd rather hang on?
I think more likely than not, at some point this offseason, Kinsler will get moved. I think there's too many logical fits out there. And I think, unlike last offseason, when they were looking at trade possibilities, the Tigers are so much further along in the rebuild. There's not a whole lot of compelling reasons for Kinsler to use his no-trade rights to stick around. I think he can and should use his no-trade rights to kind of steer which way he wants to go,
right,
as far as a potential destination. You know, he certainly earned that with his contract. But last offseason, when they couldn't trade Kinsler, when they couldn't find what they wanted for J.D. Martinez, when there wasn't nearly the type of offers for Verlander that came about later, they decided to keep the gang together and make one more run at it. There's no one more run coming with this team, clearly.
Right.
They're too far down the road with the rebuild. So it seems destined sooner or later to be some sort of deal coming down and to kind of accelerate this rebuild. Hopefully.
One more thing I wanted to talk to you about. Rule 5 draft comes up on Thursday. The Tigers have the number one pick in that draft, as well as the draft obviously coming up in the spring. They'll have to clear up some space on the 40-man before that. That could be a Kinsler trade or something like that. But there's value to be had in the Rule 5 draft. How seriously are the Tigers taking the prep for Thursday and to see what's out there that they could take?
Oh, very seriously. They were reportedly meeting for a couple days last week, even before getting down to the winter meetings, to try to go over potential options and go over what areas they should try to address and where they could get the most value out of this. Because for a team in Detroit's situation where you're simultaneously trying to get younger, trying to get young talent, but also having to watch payroll, it just makes too much sense not to take this seriously and to try to get as much value in as many either innings or at-bats as you can out of this. The last time the Tigers were in this situation was 2003, really, and they had three Rule 5 picks on that team. They drafted three, ended up cutting one of those guys loose, but then traded in spring training for another Rule 5 pick. So they had a bullpen. I think they were all pitchers that they carried that whole year. So three of their seven or eight relievers or whatever it was were Rule 5 guys. And they ended up getting some value long-term with Wilfredo Ledesma. So I think those are the type of guys you're looking to get. You're not going to, unless something crazy happens, you're not going to get star players out of Rule 5. What you're looking for are the types of guys who can stick around for a few years, who can plug holes, and can get you cost-effective talent, considering really what is a minuscule investment.
Right. And maybe you strike gold and get lucky and somebody becomes a star player.
Maybe you get Johan Santana. Yeah. Who knows? He was a Rule 5.
Every once in a while. All right. That is going to do it for MLB.com Extras, our Tigers edition. We are at the winter meetings in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. Tim McMaster here along with Jeffrey Flanagan, our MLB.com Royals reporter, Joe Posnanski of MLB.com as well. We are talking about this Kansas City Royals team at the winter meeting, what's going on with the organization, taking questions as well. And Jeffrey, let's start with the fact that it seems like everything this Royals team is going to do is based on Eric Hosmer at this point. They would love to bring this guy back. Obviously, there's this huge group of free agents with the Royals, and they can't bring them all back. Hosmer seems like the guy they'd like to. Where is that right now? Because it seems like there's mutual interest, at least.
There is. It's still up in the air, though. I mean, they have budget concerns, and we really don't. The market has not been established for him yet. And once that happens, Dayton will get a better idea of if they can even get in the bidding. And really, that's the domino effect of their whole offseason right now, because if they lose him, if he goes to the Yankees or Red Sox or whatever, I get a sense from everybody in the front office that they're in for a total rebuild. And it'll be painful, but we've talked about this before. They've done it before. They know how to do it. But if they are able to get him, I think they'd still go to a slight rebuild. Obviously, they'll have to because they're going to lose all those free agents. But that's the guy they'd like to have around to shepherd in a younger group of guys. So, really, that's the guy they've been targeting all offseason, and they're just holding their breath hoping they can get him.
He has to also know that that's kind of the plan. Hey, if you're staying, right, you're going to be that leadership guy, and maybe we're not a playoff contender right away, but we'd like you to still be here when we are.
Yeah, it feels to me like it's one of those things where, sure, Dayton would love to bring him back and would do what he could to bring him back. But I think they're being pretty realistic, and I mean, I don't feel like they have a lot to offer him. I mean, they certainly are, you know, money-wise, there's that issue. But what is this team going to be over the next 3 or 4 years? He's been through that in Kansas City. He didn't like it. And I think that they're gonna certainly do the best they can. They love him. Kansas City loves him. He's as popular a player as they've had since George Brett. But I think realistically they probably know he's gone, and this is probably going to be a full rebuild.
It's been an incredibly slow winter, or not winter meetings, but off-season. Everything was waiting for Shohei Ohtani and Giancarlo Stanton. But the Royals have been making little moves kind of all along the way, as many as anybody, really. They signed Scott Barlow, kind of a minor move. Willie Peralta, who could help this team. They got Terrence Gore back on a minor league deal. They signed a couple of those Braves prospects to help down the road. How about Peralta, a one-year deal? It's got a club option. Where does he fit into the plans?
Well, he could be a swing man. He could be a rotational depth. But they love power arms in the bullpen. This is an organization that always has loved those. And he can still bring it 96, 98. They've got a new pitching coach coming in, and maybe he can be the guy that kind of unlocks Peralta. He could end up being the closer. They lost Mike Minor. He really did a fantastic job at the end of September. They're not confident with Kelvin Herrera coming back as a closer. So they've done things like that before, converted starters into closers like Wade Davis for one and Mike Minor for another. So Peralta, to me, is the most interesting thing they've done, which hasn't been a ton this offseason. But that was the most interesting signing to me.
All right, we're going to take some questions. And the first one in, we talked about Hosmer, but this question is, which of the big free agents are they most likely to retain? I'll spin that a little bit. If they can't bring back Hosmer, would they attempt to bring back any of those other guys? Moustakas, Kane, any of those guys?
No.
It's Hosmer or, bust. Like you said, bust.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make sense to bring back any of the other guys and kind of do, a partial rebuild or whatever like that with them. The reason they consider Hosmer for that role is he can do it. I mean, he is the leader in the clubhouse, and he has been for several years. And, I agree with Joe. It's a long shot, but I've talked to Haas, daily, during the season, and he loves Kansas City and he loves this organization. He feels some loyalty to him, but, money talks. So we'll see what happens.
Alex Gordon was similar, though, right? I mean, it was different.
Well, the market came back
right,
to the Royals on that one.
And they were win now, and he knew they were going to be a contending
exactly.
team.
But I think that is interesting. I mean, it could come around. I mean, Hosmer could go out and try to get the big money deal and have it come back around to Kansas City. It's not impossible. I think it's a different situation, and I think the Royals realized when they made the Alex Gordon deal that could hurt them down the road, and I think it is hurting them now.
All right, next question. Are the Royals more likely to fill holes via trade or free agency when they see those holes?
I would say probably neither. I think they'll come within the organization. Raul Mondesi is in line to step in at shortstop. Paulo Orlando is in line to take over in center field. Hunter Dozier, who had kind of a wasted year last year, was hurt twice and hardly played at all. But he's a guy they've worked out at first base the last couple of years. He could be the guy at first base. They have Brandon Moss. He's more of a DH. He's just not a very good defensive first baseman. So that's why they would probably consider Hunter Dozier. But, they've talked to guys like Matt Adams, as a possible free agent signing. Not necessarily the defensive guy they would like. But I still think that they're going to really slash payroll if they don't get Eric Hosmer and just kind of start over.
But I would say this. I mean, one thing that Dayton has been proven to be very, very good at is these small-type moves, mm-hmm. right? Picking up guys here and there that can help the team, especially in the bullpen, especially in the rotation. I think he's going to be on the lookout for any kind of bargains, any kind of things that he can sort of scoop up and just try to keep this team going until they can get the rebuild going.
And we saw that a couple years ago with Ryan Madsen and Joe Blanton, taking guys off the scrap heap.
That's right.
And they contributed to a World title. So.
The next question is similar, but I'll take it a different direction. What internal options could the Royals be leaning on in 2018? You talked about it a little bit. Raul Mondesi, here's a guy that made his major league debut in the World Series. I think the first ever to do that. He came up. Obviously, he's got the bloodlines. He came up, and then we didn't really hear that much again. Is he still thought of in the same way he was when he was a top prospect?
Yeah, it's go time for him. Yeah. I mean, there are no other options there. I mean, they have a great-looking kid named Nicky Lopez who just tore up the AZL this year. And he's probably a couple years away. So it's Mondesi at shortstop, and they're just going to have to live with, you know, if it's a .220 average, they'll have to live with that and just have him develop. And then I mentioned Dozier, of course. And after that, you know, I still consider Jorge Bonifacio a guy who's a developing player, but he's going to get a chance to play every day in right field now. So there is some talent there. It's just not quite what it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
I think the Mondesi is really an interesting situation. I mean, they've loved this guy. They loved him 2 years ago. And in the old days with the Royals, in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and all the way up to when they were really good, that guy would have already gotten his chance. He would have already played 150 games, and let's find out. But because they were very, very good and so loaded in so many positions, he really hasn't. And yeah, now he's going to kind of get thrown in the way that a Carlos Beltran did or somebody else, where it's going to be like sink or swim. And mm-hmm. and it's going to be very interesting. He's tremendously talented in so many different ways. But can he put it all together? Can he make enough contact? Can he do all these things that they don't know the answer to yet? That's going to be, to me, as big a question in the coming next year. Yeah. Assuming they don't get Hosmer back, that's going to be the big question, because is he a guy you can build around?
Yeah, that's the question, right? Because he can fly,
right,
and he can play shortstop.
Got some power.
It's got big power, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is if he's hitting 129
right,
May 30th, what do you do? I mean, you're kind of out of options there. So, you know, we were talking about free agents. Escobar is a guy that could actually probably re-sign in late January or February. I don't think there's a big market for him. They might get him for, you know, $5 million or something like that. So he could be maybe a backup plan for Mondesi at short.
Yeah, that's an interesting one as well. All right, Don wants to know about in-season trade value. This is a thing we've seen the Phillies do a little bit the last couple of years, where this time of year you bring in that veteran player who can help you out, and then if they have a nice year, maybe you get them on the cheap, they have a nice year, and then you can use them as a chip in July at the deadline. Is that something Royals would approach and think about doing this offseason?
I think they actually would go the other direction,
right,
and maybe trade someone like Danny Duffy or and this is going to sound crazy, but Salvador Perez or somebody like that, and just stock up the farm system as much as they can. If they really start out of the gate slow next year and it's just looks like a dreadful year, I would not be surprised to see Dayton just blow it up and go, all right, let's start all the way over.
Well, and I think it's what you saw this year was everybody said they needed to do that. Everybody said trade Hosmer, trade Moustakas, trade Kane, get as much as you can because you're not going to be able to re-sign him. And he decided, and I think with the support certainly of the city and what everybody wanted, one more shot for mm-hmm. these guys. And he lost them all. Now they're all gone, probably. So I think that Jeff's exactly right. I think you're much more likely to see they're not going to make a move to get better at the trade deadline, but they might make a move to go ahead and move a Duffy or move Perez is going to be very, very interesting, because I mentioned Hosmer being as beloved as anybody. Everybody loves Salvi. Everybody mm-hmm. in Kansas City loves Salvi, but his contract is, you know, it's not quite there yet, but it is going to come up. He is a guy with a lot of value for a team that is not going anywhere for a while.
Right.
Could he do it? Could right. he trade Salvador Perez? That's going to be a big question.
Dayton's going to have to look at 20, 21, and 22 in those types of season and get as much as you can and get guys ready for that run. So.
And he has that team-friendly contract, too, which is
it's not bad.
Yeah, exactly, for another team. It's interesting, when they kept all those guys at the trade deadline, decided to hold on to them, they knew that the benefit of that was this draft is going to be big, and that depending on what those – now, this is the interesting time because of the $50 million mark that's
right.
new in the CBA. If Hosmer, Kane, Moustakas, if all those guys get $50 million contracts or more, suddenly the Royals are going to be loaded up at the top of this draft, and it's a really good draft from what we're hearing. Yeah,
five in the top 58
yeah.
is what they would get, which is pretty impressive. So they'll be able to restock there. But, again, those guys are going to be several years away. So, and going back to the trade deadline, I mean, they were in the playoffs when he made those deals. They were the top wild card.
Oh, yeah.
Team. So it made total sense for him to gun for it and go yep. one more time. Dayton felt he owed that to the team, to the city, to ownership, to everybody, and said, let's go, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, I think that's right. Very interesting thing about the draft, though. You know, Dayton That's a mixed record with him in the draft. I mean, he obviously had the great run with Moustakas and Hosmer and then, you know, picking up some of these other guys. But in recent years, those guys have, you know, they've been drafting a little bit lower, but they've not gotten the guys to help them. And that's a... They can't miss this time around. I mean, you talk about go time for Mondesi. This is go time for this organization. They've got to get several players that are going to help them down the road.
Well, they did get Brandon Finnegan and Sean Manaea, which were really good first round picks, yep.
and traded them away, right?
And to help them get a world championship,
right? Which is all part of it. Yep. Ashley wants to know any word on Ned Yost's recovery. Obviously, he fell. He's not here at the winter meetings. Have you heard anything?
Yeah, he has a doctor's appointment next week, I think on the 18th, and they'll be able to decide whether he's still not mobile, whether he can even get in a wheelchair and start moving around again. It's going to be slow recovery. He's probably not even going to be available for FanFest. Right now it's kind of a push to get ready for February 12th or 13th when we open camp, so it was a really bad injury and it's taking a long time to recover.
Michael wants to know, he's looking at other teams as what this team should do. You said if they don't get Hosmer, they break it down, full rebuild. Can Royals fans look to what happened to the Houston Astros and what they were able to do as maybe a model and a hopeful thought of what can happen with this Royals team?
I think so, too. And the other element to that, too, is they'll be able to bank some payroll, get that payroll down and stash it up for when they really want to make another move, which they really didn't do the last rebuild. You know, they just kind of slowly built up. Payroll went up because of other factors. But this time around, if they bank some payroll, they might be able to go out and add a free agent in 20 or 21 and become even better. So, yeah, that's a possibility.
But I would also say this. I mean, you know, and I've talked at some length with Dayton about how Houston did it. He does not want to get that bad. He will not. I mean, he will do everything in his power. They don't want to lose 105 games, 110 games. He's not going to tank. He's going to try every year to give it his best. He feels like he owes that again to the organization, to ownership, to the team, to the fans. So it's a different kind. I mean, I think Houston was really willing to be as bad as necessary in order to do exactly what they had to do. Dayton is going to certainly have his eye on the future, and he's going to break it down, I think. But he's going to expect that this team can still be competitive because he won't put a non-competitive team on the field.
Small market
teams. He won't get a number one pick anytime soon.
The Indians did it without really getting bad. Yeah. And a similar small market team, it can be done that way as well. Jack wants to know, what is Alex Gordon's trade value? Would they consider making that move?
None. I mean, not really. Yeah. I mean, he is a gold glover, and that weighs a lot to a lot of organizations. But with the size of that contract, the Royals would have to eat a ton of it.
That's the thing. They'd have to eat the money in order to make that deal, and it wouldn't be worth it. And he's still – look, they knew what they were doing. When they brought him back, they brought him back to be a lifelong Royal, and that's what he's going to be.
Yep. And I think the fans would love to see that, just let him play out that career. And he's a guy that won a championship and will always be – he'll never buy a meal in Kansas City, right? That's for sure.
Well, he doesn't have to. He can afford it. But he did actually, you know, this sounds crazy, but he hit better in September. So he started going the opposite way a little bit more, starting beating the shift a little bit more. And I think, you know, the coaches I've talked to were encouraged by that if he can carry that over, we might see a little bit more of the normal Alex Gordon next year.
Michael's putting together his lineup for next year, his breakdown. And for the outfield, he says, Soler in left, Gordon in center field, Bonifacio in right field?
I would say Soler is more likely the DH next year. And Gordo would be, Paulo Orlando actually can play a pretty good center field. He's really fast. He's not Lorenzo Cain, but he'll do the job. And Alex Gordon's just too good in left to me.
That's right. That's right. No, I mean, he's such a strength in left field. Yeah. Don't make him a mediocre center fielder.
Exactly.
He's a great left fielder. Keep him in left field.
Your outfield defense would really go down the hill if you had Soler in left and Gordon in
center.
Yes,
very much.
And Bonifacio in right, who's not exactly a gold glover either. So.
Excellent stuff. Thank you for the questions. We want to thank Jeffrey Flanagan and Joe Posnanski. I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for tuning in. We're at the winter meetings in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. We're talking about the Minnesota Twins. Tim McMaster, along with Rhett Bollinger, our MLB.com Twins reporter, and 2018 Hall of Fame electee, Jack Morris. Of course, Twins fans all know who you are, Jack. We want to take your questions for Jack and Rhett about the Twins, about the Hall of Fame experience, all of that. So we'll get right into it, Jack. And first question for you is, it's been a whirlwind, obviously, for you. Got the news on Sunday night. And you had some appearances then. And then Monday, of course, you kind of made the rounds. And so much goes into it. Just talk about what the ride has been like so far.
Well, you know, the emotions of the first night, I think, are hard to describe. It's quite a roller coaster of emotions that happened because I wasn't prepared to get the call. And when I did, of course, that first 15 minutes were off the charts because they asked me to wait. I waited as long as I could, and I finally called my wife and my son at home in Minnesota. They were ecstatic, and I said, look, I've only got a few minutes, and I want to talk to all my family before I go out there and have the announcement made. And so I called my oldest son in Michigan, I called my middle son in Michigan, and then I called my sister and dad up in Mora, Minnesota, and I called my brother out in Utah, all within 15 minutes, and every one of them were in tears. I was in tears, and it was just, oh, what a wreck. But Monday, a lot different day, just a busy, busy day. Again, emotional for me when we met the press for the press conference, but it's only because, you know, I'm looking at guys and the reality of seeing Hall of Famers sitting in front of me that voted for me, it was pretty overwhelming.
And you were gracious enough to allow MLB.com cameras to be with you for a lot of that ride. There's a great site clip out on MLB.com now taking you through the day and the emotions, and it's a really neat piece. Another one from Jack, for Jack from Minnesota is, what does it mean for you to be another Hall of Famer from St. Paul, Minnesota? And I say that in that piece, Paul Molitor says, hey, it's another one for the St. Paul Sandlots.
You know, it's amazing. It really is. Now, when we got to Pro Bowl, all three of us, I looked across the diamond, saw Dave Winfield, had a pitch against him. I said, he's a Hall of Famer, no question. I started pitching against Paul Molitor in Pro Bowl. We played since we were 12, 14, 15 years old, somewhere in there. We've been competing against each other, and not only baseball, but basketball back in middle school and in high school. And got to the big leagues, and I look across the diamond, this guy's wearing me out. I said, he's a Hall of Famer. And, you know, I get to a point in my career where I thought I had enough, and it wasn't happening. And I was so happy for those two guys. Obviously, there's no doubt in my mind they're Hall of Famers. I finally made the trifecta. And my goodness, what a great rush it was for all of us, and for St. Paul. You know, it's not a place known as a baseball mecca, but must have been the youth instructors that we had that really helped us all attain our goals.
Yeah, you talk about the warm weather climate developing a lot of the players, but Minnesota, all that cold weather, all that hockey. And you guys came out of it playing baseball. All right, when you look at this Minnesota Twins team right now, obviously they're in a good spot. Hey, this team went to the postseason when a lot of people thought they weren't going to get there yet. So they seem like they're ahead of schedule right now. So the questions coming in, this one, I'll start with you, Rhett. What's the biggest offseason focus right now for the Twins?
It's definitely acquiring starting pitching at this point. I think definitely relief pitching as well. But they need another starter up top there. You know, they have Irvin Santana they like a lot. Jose Berríos had a nice year. Kyle Gibson had a nice second half, but outside of that, they don't have much depth. They've got guys coming back from injury and Phil Hughes, some young guys they like as well, but finding a starting pitcher out there maybe in free agency or via trade is definitely the top priority. They've already checked in on pretty much everybody available, even the top guys. They've looked into Yu Darvish, Jake Arrieta, Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb. The top guys, we'll see, you know, if it's a match with any of those guys, but I definitely know that talking to the front office here in the winter meetings, the pitching is the priority right now.
It seems like everything's very slow right now. So another question is, when is this all going to get started?
It's a great question. Yesterday we talked to Thad Levine about that, and he said that he thinks we'll go in tiers. I think it's going to be one guy, maybe let's say that, you know, Arrieta or Darvish, you know, sign. Maybe all of a sudden that first year will start kind of moving a little bit. Maybe that mid-tier if a guy starts to sign. We've seen it a little bit with the relief market recently. There have been a couple of relievers signed some multi-year deals. But like you said, it's been so slow. I think only two guys so far have signed multi-year deals that are starting pitchers. And one of them came from Japan, a guy most guys don't know about, and Miles Mikolas, who signed with the Cardinals. So it's been a slow-moving market, but sometimes with the winter meetings here and then the holidays coming up, it starts to move a little bit there going into the holidays.
All right, this one from Steve, and he's a Twins fan. He lives in Utah. He says, do you think this team will be built for a deep postseason push for coming years? Is this team built to last?
I think that's the hope. I think the big thing with the front office right now is kind of building toward the future. I think this year to make the postseason was a great, you know, thing for them to get to, but maybe even a year too early in a sense. I don't think people really expected it. So next year is going to be interesting to see. The Indians are still a very good team in this division. You know, the Yankees made a huge move as well. The Angels with Ohtani. So the league's definitely getting tougher, but they want to, you know, kind of keep building for the future as well. I don't think they're going to make too many short-term moves because I do think they want to kind of build that lasting winner and be a consistent winner throughout the rest of the decade.
When you watch this organization and how it's going, is this what you like to see as a guy that used to pitch for this team, obviously lives out there in Minnesota the way they're doing it?
Well, it reminds me a lot of the young Detroit Tiger team. You know, I think they've got a nucleus of players, defensive players, center fielder, obviously the key to all this. But they've got infielders, they've got hitters, they've got defense. They need that pitching. And, you know, I can say this. If I was a young pitcher that looked at the future and as a free agent, I would not overlook that team because I feel they can score me runs and they can catch the ball for me. So if I go out there and do my job, there's a good chance I'll have a lot of success. I think a lot of free agent pitchers might need to think more about what the Twins could do for them.
Yeah, when you look at the advanced metrics with this outfield, and a lot of it is just because Byron Buxton is off the charts, but he makes that outfield the best defensive outfield really in the game because there's not much other ground that needs to be covered after him. All right, we talked about the starting pitching, and Zach wants to know if you had to make a guess right now of all those available arms, who's the most likely guy for the Twins to get?
I would think that maybe Lance Lynn or Alex Cobb is probably the most likely of that list. I still think that Darvish is going to get too much, and so is Arrieta. The thing with Lynn or even Cobb and Arrieta is they're all tied to draft pick compensation as well. They were all offered the qualifying offer. But I don't think that would deter the Twins. I think at this point, the Twins have stocked up on a lot of prospects. They've made some trades recently, even for some prospects from the Angels and Mariners. So I think they're willing to give up a draft pick if they need to. So I do think they want a top-tier guy. So I think that most likely maybe a Lynn or a Cobb would make some sense.
Do you have a favorite guy among this group of free agents, a guy that you look at and really impresses you?
I don't. I think they all have potential to be real plus pitchers again next summer. You know, Darvish has got hopefully some determination to make up for postseason. Yeah. But, you know, we also heard a story that the Astro hitters were claiming that Darvish was tipping his pitches during the postseason. So that might be a difference if they can get that ironed out. No question these guys all can pitch. I just want to go back to my previous statement. You pitch on the Twins team with that defense and that young hitting, I think you're going to be really surprised at how many games you can win.
George wants to know, do the Twins plan on going after a DH, which isn't something you usually hear, a team going after a DH. Usually that position just kind of becomes the extra guy.
It's not a top priority, but I do think they'd like to find a right-handed bat in that sense. You know, they obviously lost Byung-ho Park. He's going back to Korea. It wasn't really a factor last year all anyway. He was in the minor leagues. They still have, you know, Kenny Vargas on the roster and Robbie Grossman. Grossman did a lot of DHing last year, but not really a prototypical DH, a guy that can get on base, but not much power, switch hitter. I think they'd love to get maybe a right-handed bat, maybe look into a guy like a Mike Napoli or a Mark Reynolds, maybe on a one-year deal. It'd be more of a one-year flyer. I don't think they'd want to really commit too long for that, but it's certainly, you know, something they're looking into, but I do think pitching is their top priority at this point.
Jack Tony wants to know, what do you miss about playing baseball the most?
You know, the pure competition.
Yeah.
I think when it gets in your blood, and you really can't ever substitute in any other profession. You can maybe do it financially and play with Wall Street and that kind of thing, but there's nothing like one-on-one competition, pitcher, hitter, whatever sport it is. And, you know, it's also the camaraderie we had with teammates. I think those are things you can come close to in different professions, but being, we called it in the trenches with the boys, it was something special.
We're getting lots of questions, obviously. We're also getting a ton of comments that are just congratulations, Jack. So know that all the fans out there on Twins.com, Twins website, are excited for you.
I'm so happy, and welcome everybody to come to Cooperstown this summer. It should be a heck of a party.
There's going to be a lot of people, I think, involved, that's
yeah,
for sure. So far,
be.
You and Alan, and we'll see who gets added in January as well. Steven wants to know, are the Twins still looking to trade Brian Dozier? That was obviously the biggest rumor a year ago before this team was a playoff team, but he's now 1 year away from free agency. Is that still on the radar?
I think at this point it's not. He's definitely a team leader for them, coming off another good year. I think last year was obviously the talk of the winter meetings, was going to happen. Didn't happen. Right now they're trying to compete. I can't imagine a situation where they'll trade him. Same with Irvin Santana. They're both in the last year of their deal, but I think if anything, Twins might even look into extending Dozier. I mean, I know they've got a lot of young guys. They're coming up, you know, with Nick Gordon. They've already got Polanco. They've got some middle infielders. But if anything, they like Dozier enough that I think it's more likely that he gets extended than he gets traded.
You've had a lot of talks with Dozier over the years, right?
You know, I think it was the case last year. I think they might have overvalued him in a trade situation. I think they thought they were going to get a lot more than clubs were willing to offer, and they didn't just want to give this guy away because of what Rhett just said. You know, he is a team leader. He's a great kid, and he's a darn good fielder, by the way, and a great player. So after going through last year with Brian Dozier and all the stuff that he knew was on his shoulders because of the trade rumors, I think that showed his character, and I totally agree with him. They need him in that lineup. I don't see that happening now.
Red Linda wants to know, will Jorge Polanco still be our shortstop this year? And she adds, really love watching him play.
At this point, that's the plan. Jorge had a nice second half. Had some struggles, you know, in the first half offensively. Defensively, he held his own. You know, I think people had questions about his defense. He did, you know, pretty solid there at shortstop. I do think, like I said, Nick Gordon's on the way. They've got some guys even, you know, younger than that they like a lot at shortstop. But I do think coming in the year, that's going to be their guy. I mean, it would surprise me if they made a trade involving him. Could it happen? Sure. I mean, if they really got a pitching, you know, he's obviously under, you know, I think 4 more years of control, so they could trade him for pitching, but at this point, I think they like him as their shortstop.
All right, this one for you again, Jacques. This from Mark. He wants to know, is there one hitter that you absolutely owned?
Well, he's still alive, so we better not talk about that because there's still time for him to get even. You know, I did really well against Carlton Fisk and a guy named Phelps out in Seattle. A couple guys I can't explain why, but I really, really had some good numbers against those two guys, and the list is probably bigger on the other side, guys that own me.
I was going to say, is there one guy that you just hated seeing step into
No,
that
there
box?
Wasn't one guy. There was 150 guys. I hated them all.
All right, I will say this as we say goodbye, Jack. One of my first segments at MLB.com on camera was you. 2 days after, you didn't get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You were gracious. You were tremendous through the whole thing. And now you're in. Congratulations.
Thanks, Timmy. I appreciate it.
That's a great way to end it. Thanks for joining us here.